Journal Club for August 2007. The topic is acute ischemic stroke. About 80% of strokes in the United States are caused by focal cerebral ischemia due to some kind of arterial blockage or occlusion. The remaining 20% of strokes are caused by bleeding. They're two completely different categories. Here we're going to only talk about those where there's a blockage. Of course, once that blood flow is blocked, the brain and the distribution of that artery will become what we call ischemic or lack blood flow, and then there will be death, and then there's a region sort of around it, which if it continues on and on and on, would also die off, but initially might have some viable tissue with it. 30-day case fatality rates in Western societies range between 10 and 17%. The likelihood of a poor outcome after a stroke is dependent on age, with increasing age more of a problem, and other diseases which are present, like coronary artery disease or diabetes. The differential diagnosis of a stroke should also include migraine, a paralysis following a seizure, low blood sugar or hypoglycemia, subdural hematoma, where there's bleeding below the dura, usually secondary to trauma, brain tumors, and finally some kind of a psychiatric type disorder that would mimic stroke. Two leading causes of ischemic stroke are, one is atherosclerosis, which is the buildup of plaque, like cholesterol, and the other is cardioembolism, where there moves a clot from one of the valvular areas or the cardiac region, and that clot then blocks the artery to the brain and causes the stroke. Occasionally, unusual causes can be considered. For example, in younger people, sometimes you can have certain clues that suggest alternative diagnoses. For example, if there's a fever and a cardiac murmur, one can think of what's known as infective endocarditis, where the heart valves are infected. And if one has a marked headache and elevated what's known as sedimentation rate in people over 50, then the giant cell arteritis might be the cause. Also, there can be certain situations where a carotid artery can actually dissect, and that actually causes the problem. And there, often, there's other signs that sometimes are particular to that, where the eyelid can be involved in the eye on the opposite side. Carotid bruits, or sounds from the carotid when the doctor listens with a stethoscope, lack sufficient sensitivity and specificity for a diagnosis of severe carotid stenosis. Because a stroke may be complicated by heart problems such as coronary artery disease and myocardial infarction and arrhythmias, cardiac monitoring is usually recommended for at least the first 24 hours. An echocardiogram is usually obtained. However, there's no emergency in doing it unless one is thinking of infective endocarditis. In terms of scanning, both CT and MRI have high sensitivity for acute intracranial hemorrhage, but MRI has a much higher sensitivity than CT for acute ischemic changes, especially in the posterior fossa and in the first hours after an ischemic stroke. Blood clotting agents like tPA have been around for quite a while now, and multi-center randomized trials have demonstrated the efficacy of the treatment with intravenous tPA if started within 3 hours after the onset of symptoms. Among patients who are treated, there is generally, in that time period, there is generally a 31 to 50% favorable neurologic or functional outcome at 3 months as compared with 20 to 38% in placebo. However, mortality rates for the two groups are similar. There, of course, is a risk of bleeding into the brain as a complication, and this occurs in about 6.4% of patients treated with intravenous TPA and about 0.6% of controls. Aspirin is a treatment in two large randomized trials. The use of aspirin, 160 to 300 milligrams per day, initiated within 48 hours after the onset of stroke and continued for 2 weeks or until discharge, led to a reduced rates of death or dependency at discharge or at 6 months. If one is giving TPA, however, one should wait 24 hours before starting the aspirin. A meta-analysis of 6 randomized trials involving 21,000 or more patients found no evidence of the use of anticoagulants such as heparin, oral anticoagulants like Coumadin in acute phase of stroke improves functional outcome. So this doesn't really work for ischemic stroke. However, subcutaneously administered low-dose unfractionated heparin or low molecular weight heparin has been recommended in patients at high risk for deep venous thrombosis, such as patients who are immobile. In patients with large supratentorial infarcts, the brain swelling may occur, which can lead to what we call herniation through the brainstem, and can occur usually 2 to 5 days after the onset of the stroke. In these cases, sometimes surgical treatment may be indicated, and the neurosurgeon should be consulted in those cases. Of course, secondary prevention of a stroke is very, very important, and the recommended strategies include the use of low-dose aspirin and dipyramidol in patients with ischemic stroke of arterial origin, oral anticoagulation in patients with cardiac embolism, treatment of hypertension, statin therapy for lowering lipids, glucose control for those with diabetes, smoking cessation, and carotid endarterectomy if there's a significant carotid stenosis on that side. Given concerns about adverse effects of short-term lowering of blood pressure on cerebral perfusion, current guidelines based on consensus opinion recommend withholding antihypertensive therapy during the acute phase of a stroke unless the diastolic blood pressure exceeds 120 millimeters of mercury or the systolic pressure exceeds 220 millimeters of mercury in patients who are not candidates for RTPA. However, if you're giving TPA, then you want to maintain the blood pressure systolic below 180 and the diastolic below 105. Numerous neuroprotective agents have been trialed. For example, free radical trapping agents recently were studied, and even hypothermia has been tried. However, large clinical trials are necessary to really evaluate these fully. The main contraindications to intravenous thrombolysis in patients with acute ischemic stroke: onset of symptoms greater than 3 hours before the start of treatment, obviously intracranial hemorrhage on CT or MRI, head trauma or stroke in the previous 3 months, myocardial infarction in the previous 3 months, any bleeding in the last 21 days, either gastrointestinal or urinary tract, major surgery in the previous 14 days, history of intracranial hemorrhage, systolic blood pressure greater than 185 or diastolic greater than 110, evidence of active bleeding or acute trauma, use of oral anticoagulants and an INR greater than 1.7, use of heparin in the previous 48 hours and a currently prolonged APTT, platelet count less than 100,000, blood glucose level less than 50, seizure with post-ictal residual neurologic impairments. This discussion on acute ischemic stroke is based on an article in Clinical Practice from the New England Journal of Medicine the August 9, 2007 issue by Bart van der Werp and Jan van Ginden. Thanks for listening.